thank you for listening to the Contemplations Podcast by Angelo Caragiorgos, who thinks that the path to authenticity is paved with enthusiasm when you embrace life as a whole. As a token of appreciation, you can download Angelo's audiobook, How to Get Closer to Your Real Self, Entering a Path of Fulfillment and Long-Lasting Enthusiasm Made by You. You only need to go to angelocaragiorgos.com/gift.
Since the first time I visited the UK, I admired the beauty of its nature. At first, it was the parks that got me. London, for example, has too many parks with a great variety. You can have an incredible view of London from Greenwich Park, and you can enjoy the elegance of Holland Park with its Japanese simplicity of the Kyoto Garden. Of course, you can feel the vibe of the city, find monuments, take a boat ride in the lake, and so on in Hyde Park. Or you can enjoy the woods of Hampstead Heath. The list could go on for much longer, and in fact, from all the cities I have been, none can reach this level, in my opinion. But I wouldn't avoid mentioning other cities, such as Bath, with the outstanding Victoria Park, which has a magnificent botanical garden among others, the Alexandra Park with a splendid view of the whole city, the Priory Park, and even the Parade Gardens at the center of the city have a nice touch. It seems that the wet weather of the island is very helpful in the maintenance of such outstanding environments. As well, the English through the years have been bringing plenty of different plants from their colonies, thus the variety has increased amazingly. This high admiration of mine obviously was what led me to find then something even more enjoyable than that. So, not a long time ago, I realized that all around the UK countryside, there exists a huge network of official and unofficial pathways. For example, there is the Thames Path, which is an official foot pathway that follows the River Thames from the southeastern side of London to Gloucestershire, a path of approximately 180 miles. Another great thing is that the rail network can easily connect you from the city that you might be coming to the trail. So, for example, you can take the train from London and stop in a station close to the path. Then you can take the train back from another station close to the trail after you have walked some kilometers on the latter. By walking in these paths, you are having the magnificent experience of the English countryside at its best. You are walking next to different kinds of plants, picturesque houses, meadows, animals, lakes, rivers, forests, landscape views from tops of hills, and so on. Words would never be enough to describe the experience, and since a photo is 1,000 words anyway, I share some of my photos in my Instagram account. According to my understanding, it can't be natural for human beings to be staying away from nature, and this might easily have effects in our psychosynthesis. Not only the places we live are made of cement and are far away from nature, but we don't usually give the time or we don't have enough in order to make a visit to the countryside. Fortunately, some cities like London and Berlin offer the opportunity of a small connection. So, it has become natural to me to hop on a train, take a walk for several hours, and before the night falls, grab the train back. I may do it alone or with company. When having walked several kilometers and experienced so many different parts of the countryside, I return home feeling like I was in a trip. My mind is so full of beautiful memories that it's like it had been an experience of several days instead of some hours, which in fact was. But me, being among the trees, or next to a lake makes me contemplate a lot, and I have learned many lessons which I was never taught by any school or university. These times, the lessons fill my senses and I recognize clearly the practical applications of them. At the same time, plenty of them look contradictory to what I was taught formally, or from what is considered correct and normal by the majority. But I wonder, whom are we supposed to trust more in the end? I raise my head and stare at the hill on the other side. I see many trees, but they are so colorful. I take a photo and I am sure that it can't be the same with what my eyes can see. So many varieties of green, red and yellow, not even Claude Monet could replicate that. How vast the variance! What a splendor for my heart! How infinite is our world! As I am walking, I feel a nice smell. I turn my head and I see the tree that comes from. I continue and sense a different one. This time the tree has blossomed. I touch the leaves. I have never touched this specific texture, and I know that the next leaf from the other tree will make me feel differently. But they don't seem jealous. The tree that hasn't blossomed yet isn't in a hurry to reach the point of the blossomed one, because its time is different, isn't it? I wonder, they have different smells and this amazes us. Why then do we consult people to do the same like everybody else? Why do we oppose everyone that makes different choices with the excuse he won't make money in his life? Certainly, the tulip isn't going to try to copy the odor of camellia because it is more cool. And imagine how greater is the potential of the human mind compared to a tree. But at the same time, how destructive that the mind has reached the opposite point. It seems to be using all its resources to reach the perfection in imitation. The trees don't compare with each other, do they? Some keep their leaves during the winter and others not. That doesn't make the latter something better. The plants, depending on their kind, grow on different times of the year. The fig that has figs on August doesn't make fun with the orange tree that makes oranges in the winter because it's late. Same as the trees, we have different pace, we are on different stages, and each and every one of us is taking different lessons from life at any point. Everyone though receives pressure that is late all the time, and everyone conforms by urging himself to do something more. And after a short period, the pressure begins again in order to conform again, and so on. Is there any end of this? Can there be any? As I walk, I see two apple trees. I prefer the right one. The apples are bigger. Will the left one be angry with me because I didn't choose her? Oh no, perhaps the left will be because I am taking its apples while I am letting the other ones intact. Haha, interesting to think of it in the human terms. But how can these apples be eaten for free? There must be a credit card machine on the track. Oof, I know I can eat as many apples as I want from the tree. Even all of them. Because nature is abundant, she never counts. You can't owe to nature. You can't pay interest to her, and we can be receiving everything from what she offers. Interestingly, even though she has the real value, we are misled and give irrelevant value to printed papers made by her woods. However, we say that we own the land, the nature, even though there isn't much of nature left. Too many people are landlords. What is it to own a land? We don't even own our parts of the body, as most processes in them are happening unconsciously, while other times some parts of our body don't follow our instructions, as you know. Is there a way to prove that you have acquired the land from the one that first created it? Also, how can you own something that you were always contained in, if you think about it? A proverb in Greece says that it's not possible for the mother fox to be 10 years old while her child fox is 11. Nature taught me the paradoxical connection of doing and not doing, or else of being desiring and of being desireless. Lao Tzu had written, ever desireless, one can see the mystery. Ever desiring, one can see only the manifestations. Nature works automatically. Its processes flow by themselves and we don't participate much. It teaches us how to let go, how to understand our real loves, the processes that enthusiasm leads us, get in them and then to let ourselves freely take part in the experience, being fully immersed and without thinking too much or having expectations. When you plant a specific flower of your choice, you are putting a seed to the ground and create the appropriate conditions for it to flourish. Then you lay back and wait for the natural processes to unfold. You don't sit all the day, every day, watching the seed and waiting impatiently when it will grow, or how it can grow quicker, or why it hasn't grown enough, and so on. Same way with the higher desires. First, we have the sincere and deep will, and after setting the appropriate conditions, we enter the process and let our natural selves unfold with less thinking and more openness. I also sometimes visit for a second or third time the same part of a trail. I may want to show it to a friend, or it is more convenient to go there at that day. But the path is never the same. Some trees have changed colors depending on the period, while others might have dropped the leaves they had, or the opposite. As Heraclitus famously said, everything flows. All experience is a constant change of crystallizations that are understood only because of our senses as a continuous process. Every moment is an opportunity for a decision that is more loving to you than the previous second. Every moment is something entirely new from everything that has happened to you, and if you decide, it can be left to where it belongs, in the past. Every moment is precious and with high interest, because you will never ever experience it exactly as it is. And the more you shed light to its depth, the more you realize better its significance. Whenever I think the conditions are suitable, I may go outside the trail and do a customization. Mostly this happens when there is a river or a lake nearby. Obviously, on Thames Path there wasn't a need for that. But I generally have a tendency towards the water. I feel I want to be close to it. It has more substance than the air, which means that you can sense it much more. However, it is fluid. It takes the shape of the cup that's into, as Bruce Lee similarly has mentioned. We can be like water, flexible and ready for change of shape at any given moment, with a close understanding of our instincts in order to take the appropriate form according to circumstances, unlimited and free of labels that can only limit us and make us ice cubes. At any time, I am trying to be as I need to be for this specific moment and not as I generally think I am or as others think I am. Same as reality is crystallized by our senses at any given time, we crystallize with our mind the corresponding form that comes intuitively when we are in the flow. Therefore, the river reminds it more symbolically. However, the lakes and the ponds have their own magnificence. They are unmoving, and for me is the constancy of the eternal. When all these rivers and waterfalls flow, others heavily and with tremendous sound, while others' waters move slowly, the lake is there unattached, maintaining its constancy. It's like a perfect mirror. When Narcissus looked for the first time at himself on the lake, he remained there forever, admiring his idol without knowing it was his own. How could I not be like Narcissus when I see the water painted so perfectly by the outstanding vastness of the clouds? At that time, the water is as the sky, same way like what the greatest mystic of all times, Hermes Trismegistus, taught humanity, that as above, so below. Any movement of the clouds, any passing plane, any appearance of the sun is clearly projected on the surface of the lake. Anything that is happening inside us, we project it in our interactions with our environment. And this is, I think, one main point to focus in order to find out who we are instead of who we think we are. When we are coming from a feeling of despair, this is what others feel when they see us, and this is what we will perhaps try to see in others. Similarly with fear and with anger. But when you come from feelings of compassion, then I have noticed that others come closer to you also, and see them differently. I can many times now notice that on myself. When I am coming from different emotions, I am also forming different judgments. And when I am mindful, I don't make any judgments at all. I just observe and accept it as another part of the whole. When walking through the trees, you may already have noticed that in most areas the trees that are close to each other are in a similar health condition. In the wonderful book The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World, Peter Golleben convincingly makes the case that, yes, the forest is a social network. He draws on groundbreaking scientific discoveries to describe how trees are like human families. Tree parents live together with their children, communicate with them, support them as they grow, share nutrients with those who are sick or struggling, and even warn others of impending dangers. You see, there is so much wisdom in nature, and yet looks so much mysterious. It is everywhere, and we don't notice it. It works sublimely, but is what guides everything. She is a mentor that was supposed to nurture us, but man took the choice of trying to handle her. Instead of sitting in silence and listening to her, he thought he can go above her. So much his vanity is. Instead of lying in her arms and enjoying the serenity with veneration, man decided to compete unstoppably, ignoring any cost for the sacrifice it takes. But she is still there, injured though, always ready to regenerate as she has always been, because above all, she is optimistic, and she doesn't like missing opportunities for growth.